To say it's hot today would be an understatement. Temperatures have gotten so extreme in so many regions that President Joe Biden is announcing new measures aimed at helping communities deal with the scorching heat. Those are expected to improve forecasting, ensure access to drinking water, and extend protection to workers most vulnerable to heat-related deaths. At the same time, a new report from Climate Central shows that cities can be more than 12 degrees hotter at their core than surrounding areas with different infrastructure and more green spaces. It makes hotter days even more unbearable, and due to climate change, it will get worse without action. Here to explain heat islands and how to make cities cooler is Caitlin Trudeau. She is a senior research associate at Climate Central. Caitlin, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we want to hear from you. We want to know what you think about the extreme heat. Email your questions and comments to studio2 at whyy.org. Again, the email is studio2 at whyy.org. So Caitlin, we're going to jump right in. For folks who may not know, can you explain to us what an urban heat island is?
Yeah, definitely. So when we talk about urban heat islands, what we're really talking about are cities that experience significantly warmer temperatures than the surrounding rural areas. So you can think of it like a little heat dome that sits over our most populated parts of the city.
And so Climate Central did a study looking at heat islands across the country. Explain the scope of the study and what you all found.
Yeah, so what we did is we looked at the 44 most populated cities in the United States, and we looked to see how many people are impacted by this additional heat that is caused by the urban heat island effect. And what we found is that about 41 million Americans are living in places where the city infrastructure and materials make it at least 8 degrees warmer than if the city were built differently, than it would be outside the city. So a lot of people are living in areas with a lot of additional heat that makes it really hard when we have these, you know, increased temperatures, more frequent heat waves that are happening because of climate change.
Yeah. And I want to zoom out a bit because part of the problem, and you touched on it in your answer there, is just how the cities are built and designed. Can you explain
Absolutely.
A little bit about what the issues are that lead cities to have this excessive heat?
Yeah. So one of the things is the materials that we use to build our city. So when we built our cities, we replace a lot of vegetation and natural landscape with hard, dark colored materials to build our streets and our buildings. So things like asphalt, concrete, brick, these materials are really good at absorbing incoming heat from the sun, and they radiate it back out to the surrounding environment, making it warmer. Unfortunate is because we replaced the green space actually helps cool the city by reflecting more of the incoming solar radiation. So as we build more dark colored hard materials that trap in that heat, but then also how we build our cities matters too. So the dimensions and spacing of our buildings can make a big difference. Cities with lots of tall buildings, cities with narrow streets, those are better at trapping heat in and also blocking natural air wind flow. So it's not only what our cities are built and made of, but how we build them as well.
Yeah. And can you go into a little bit more depth? Because I want you to sort of give me an example. You know, Philadelphia is a heat island, so to speak. Give me an example of the differences between the way you would see a suburb designed and built that makes it a little bit cooler versus what you would see in an urban center.
Right. So in our urban centers, we have really tall buildings. We've got narrower streets. We've got a lot of people. That's another thing too, our human activity. You know, we release a lot of pollution from driving our cars, from factories, and even from using things like our air conditioners. Those things all warm the city even further. You know, out in the suburbs, you're probably going to have not as tall buildings. You're probably going to have more green space, more area for green space. And, you know, you're probably going to have wider streets, areas where basically the air can flow more freely and evenly and not get trapped like in big cities.
Yeah. And I just mentioned that Philadelphia is a heat island. And so I want to bring in one of our folks on the ground here in the city by introducing Jamile Telez Lieberman, Senior Vice President of Development, Research and Health Equity at Esperanza. Welcome to Studio 2, Jamile.
Thank you for having me.
And so it's hot here in Philly today. And I know there's a lot of work being done to mitigate urban heat island effect here in our own backyard. But before we talk about that, the Philadelphia Department of Health issued a heat health emergency. Can you explain to me what that means for the folks in our neighborhoods and how will that heat health emergency declaration help them?
Yeah, so I remember seeing that declaration go out, and I also got a text. I got an email and a text about that. And so first, I just want to flag that both of those messages that came to me were in English.
Mm.
And so that's an interesting thing we can talk about in terms of language access to information. But, you know, I think that, you know, the emergency warning means the same thing for all of us, but also different things for some of us, because it's true, all of us in the city are going to be suffering due to these sweltering temperatures, and it's going to raise the risks of heat-related illnesses across the city. But we know that there are some neighborhoods that when it gets hot, they get much hotter than other neighborhoods. So the neighborhood that we serve, Hunting Park, Juniata, Feltonville, up here in North Philly, in terms of Nueva Esperanza Inc.'s service area, is one of the hottest neighborhoods in the city, you know, regardless of the general trends in temperature. And that's due to the built environment, redlining, and lack of tree canopy. So for our folks up here, the risks in terms of heat-related illnesses like heat exhaustion, heat stroke, as well as just general uncomfortableness, right, are going to be much more profoundly felt here than in other neighborhoods like Westmount Area or Chestnut Hill, right? So, you know, it's really going to be extremely, extremely hot here.
Yeah.
And our neighbors are going to feel it. They're really going to feel it, and they're going to have to contend with that. And then there's other mitigating factors here in terms of access to cooling, which we can talk about it if we want that to be part of the conversation, that is going to make it more difficult for them to cope with these more extreme temperatures.
Yeah. And if you're just tuning in, we are talking about heat islands, and Philadelphia is one of those. We have on the line with us Caitlin Trudeau, Senior Research Associate at Climate Central, a nonprofit that published a recent study on heat islands. We also have Jamile Telez-Lieberman, SVP of Development at Esperanza. And we want to hear from you as well. Be part of the conversation. Email us your comments, questions, or concerns at studio2@whyy.org. Caitlin, I want to give you a moment to respond to what Jamile just said. I mean, this is happening everywhere. And you heard about some of the impacts that this excessive heat is having on folks in neighborhoods like Hunting Park. How is this impacting residents of other cities who are grappling with these heat islands?
Well, we're seeing a lot of the same things. I mean, we're seeing that some of the places that are the warmest are often in the neighborhoods where you have a lot of low-income population, you have a lot of people of color, people who maybe can't afford air conditioning as easily as other people. So we're really seeing a disproportionate impact on peoples in the cities as well, which is really concerning because, you know, everything she said, all of the related heat impacts are going to increase, you know, as we have more pollution, it's going to warm our cities as well. People with asthma, it's going to cause a lot more increased health impacts across the city. But we're seeing this all across the United States. It's not something that's just in one part of the U.S. We're seeing it all over. I mean, at least 9 cities we looked at had at least 1 million people that are exposed to this additional 8 degrees temperature at all times. So it's really concerning because we have a lot of people who are at risk and a lot of people who may not be able to respond or adapt as easily as others.
Yeah. And Jamile, you've been quoted as saying it's almost like our neighborhood was designed this way. I want you to get specific and tell us what are some of the issues that has led to this problem and continue to make it hard for residents to combat this heat?
Sure. Quickly, I do want to make a correction to my title. I'm SVP of Community Engagement, Research, and Health Equity here at Esperanza. The SVP of Development is Christine Nieves, actually. And I oversee the Housing Economic Development Division, which is the community engagement arm for the institution, as well as the new Institute for Latino Health Equity. So I just wanted to put that on the record real quick.
Thank you for that.
So yes, of course. So when we talk about why things are hot, why is it so hot up here? It's really by design, right? And so to get specific, our neighborhood, as opposed to other neighborhoods in the city, and this is true for cities across the country, which I'm sure Caitlin can comment on, has been victimized in terms of lack of investment and racist housing policies and development policies, like redlining, and also displacement of communities of color being pushed out of their original neighborhoods farther north in the city. And this is in terms of Philadelphia, right? And so what that means is that they end up being pushed by different mechanisms, including housing policies, displacement, and other things into neighborhoods that were not necessarily made ready to welcome people. And so we have a lot of residents up here who are living in a neighborhood that's very industrial. So there's a lot of asphalt, there's a lot of pavement, and that attracts heat. It does not reflect it. And then also in terms of trees, our neighborhood doesn't get a lot of trees. Esperanza has worked for many, many years to increase the tree canopy for our neighborhood alongside many amazing grassroots groups and also some organizations at the city level to try to increase our tree canopy to invest in some more longer term cooling strategies. But at the same time, knowing that the needs are so critical at this time and they're only going to get worse, we're also, you know, looking at other more immediate solutions in terms of heat mitigation and being able and for people to be able to cope to heat. So really what it comes down to is issues of race, issues of class, issues of color, issues of where money is going and where resources are going and to who. And our community continues to lose out. Our community, which is a community of color and mostly low income, as well as having a growing number of immigrants from other countries. So I think that's really what it boils down to. But I also think that there are ways that we can address that.
Yeah. And I want to mention that you, in the introduction, I talked about how President Biden is expected to announce new measures and funding designed to help communities deal with extreme heat. And Caitlin, I want to ask you, what are some of the things that can be put in place infrastructure-wise that can help? I mean, John Millay talked about, you know, tree canopies and other opportunities to bring in cooling measures. What are some of the infrastructure opportunities here?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, the number one thing is increasing green space, right? Trees, vegetation. One of the things I think is really great is changing what our building rooftops are. They're usually black, dark surfaces. If you can add greenery to the tops of roofs, it actually reflects a lot of that solar radiation. They have rooftop gardens, eco roofs, even just a layer of plants, shrubs. You can also paint rooftops white, and white and bright colored rooftops actually reflect a lot of the incoming solar radiation. So they cool the building inside and make it so less people have to use air conditioning. So really changing the tops of our roofs. We really can't rebuild our cities that are already built, but we can make some changes like changing our rooftops, like adding more trees, more vegetation, and using smarter building materials, using cool pavements, paving materials on sidewalks and parking lots that remain cooler than conventional pavements. And just thinking about how, you know, how we build our cities from now on, if we need to build more of our cities, and if we do, how to do so smartly in ways that will reduce the urban heat island effect.
Thank you very much. And speaking of solutions and people on the ground getting the work done, I want to bring in Mika Outlaw, a community activist and founder of Residents Organized for Advocacy and Direction, who's working to help cool down her neighborhood of Grays Ferry. Welcome to Studio 2, Mika.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me here.
Yes. And I want to just, you're doing the work of trying to cool your neighborhood. And you've said when you kind of realized that it wasn't normal for areas outside the city to be cooler with fresher air than those in the city to have thicker, heavier air and to be so warm. So you got to work. Tell me about the work you're doing to help cool things off.
Well, right now we're actually, and I'm really excited about this, we're working in partnership with Drexel University on a cooling project where two blocks in Grays Ferry, one of them being the 2600 block of Ophir Street and two blocks in Point Breeze, 15 residents per block received planter benches that were made by people from the community with vegetation in it and an umbrella. And it allows for people to come sit outside, especially if you live on the sunny side of the street. My aunt lives on the sunny side of the street. So when she wants to come sit outside, she has to chase the shade.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is The shade is on one side of the street. And so when it moves, she has to move. And now with her having this planter bench, it allows for her to be able to sit out there on the sunny side of the street. And the temperature under the umbrella is not as hot for her. And she's able to sit out. So I'm really excited about that project. We've also been working with Mr. Maurice and Ahmad Amalki from the Clean Water Organization. And we had the Office of the Philadelphia Office of Sustainability.
And Mika, I think
you're dealing with.
Yeah, and Mika, I think our connection with you is a little tenuous. So we're probably going to have to wrap this up, but you're doing work with and I couldn't hear the last thing you said. Okay, I think we lost Mika. Again, that was Mika Outlaw. She's an activist working to help cool off her neighborhood, Point Breeze, Grays Ferry, excuse me, a lot of work being done on the ground. Jamile, I want to bring you back in to talk about some of the work that you all have been doing as well. And you heard me mention to Caitlin some of this effort by the Biden administration to provide funds, to provide some new measures. What do you think you need to help make a difference, especially as we deal with climate change?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, especially since my division in particular at Esperanza are also activists on the ground, especially my staffer, Ivana Gonzalez, who leads some of our environmental justice initiatives. So that's a good question. I loved some of the suggestions that Caitlin mentioned, sort of altering the built environment in ways that are smart and efficient, painting roofs. I think that's those innovative solutions are great, but then also like we have to think about how we do that equitably. So it's you're just doing it smartly, right? Mm-hmm. Innovation and then also equitable. So like how do we go about doing those kinds of changes, because, you know, we should not expect our community members who are struggling to pay their utility bills and to put food on the tables to pay for that, to repaint their roofs, right? So I think that it's important to consider sort of like the allocation of resources, where the resources are going and who they're going to, and what are those resources, like what programs and what type are they funding, right? So I think the Biden administration needs to think about, you know, we don't just want the most innovative things we do, right? We do want science to lead what we're going to do in terms of helping to lower the temperatures in urban areas. But we also know that we can't just throw money at something and then expect it to have an effect or it to have an equitable effect where families and communities and neighborhoods that are most affected by heat are the ones that are served first, right? Because the risks for those neighborhoods are higher than other neighborhoods. I mean, that's just a fact because not all cities are cookie cutter and the same. And even in our city in Philadelphia, one block is so different from another block. Mm. And one zip code is vastly different in terms of temperature, air quality, all of that. So I think the Biden administration needs to think creatively and they need to think equitably when it comes to things like that. And, you know, I do think that tree canopy is really important. We do want to invest in that. And Esperanza has been working to do that, to lower temperatures long term and also improve air quality. But we also started thinking about weatherization of homes. And Caitlin sort of, touched on this a little bit, like, how do we make homes more energy efficient, right? Yeah. Because for us, we like to look at solutions that address multiple needs at once. So if we're making a home that's more energy efficient, that has proper cooling, then people can be cooled in their homes, in addition to having alternative greening like benches, like Mika was mentioning, outside of their homes. But then they also save money in addition to being part of more pro-climate solutions, like having an energy-efficient weatherized home. So I think we need to do a lot of things at once, and we need to be really careful about who gets what resources and when they get them, and then, you know, just trying to identify solutions that meet the realities of where communities are. One solution that might work for a neighborhood in South Philly is not necessarily going to work out for a neighborhood in North Philly, and this might be the same for other cities. So I think we just need to be cognizant of that, and I hope that the Biden administration will think along those lines as they're trying to invest in reducing some of these consequences.
So reprioritization and flexibility when we talk solutions. Thank you for that. If you are just tuning in, we're talking about heat islands. Philadelphia has several neighborhoods that are heat islands. We have on the line with us Caitlin Trudeau, Senior Research Associate at Climate Central. They published a study about heat islands. We also have Jamile Telez Lieberman, SVP of Community Engagement at Esperanza. And you just heard from Mika Outlaw, community activist working to cool down her Gray's Ferry neighborhood. I want to bring in an email, and this is for you, Caitlin. It's from Warren. Over the last few years, the city has put down the darkest color imaginable in its repaving program. It's dead black. At the same time, the city is encouraging trees and things like rooftop gardens. Can repaving be executed at the same time as urban improvement? Also, similar email from Meg. Why is blacktop still being used? And I'm thinking about climate change here, Caitlin. We heard what Jamalay had to say about some of the solutions, and yet you still see cities, not just Philly, probably other cities, still using old methods to build. How are we going to tackle climate change, and what should folks be pushing for policy-wise to make sure that this shift happens now?
Absolutely. I mean, I live in Sacramento, and I just yesterday saw brand new pavement going on, like right outside my apartment. And it's really upsetting because knowing how much heat is retained in these dark surfaces, it's just seems senseless. And we really do need to be prioritizing this now. We should have prioritized it yesterday, last year, last decade, last half century. We are really behind. So it is frustrating because we do need our community leaders to step up and realize that this is something that is important that we need to do now, that is for our city's health and for, definitely so many people are being disproportionately affected. It's definitely, we need to do it equitably. I think that was a great point there. And we need to be using smarter materials like cool pavements, things, you know, using the same black asphalt isn't going to help anyone. And it's going to make it more costly, more deadly to address in the future.
Yeah. And Jamalay, you focus on this. We want to talk about climate change. You mentioned that it's getting real in communities, more floods, higher electric bills, people getting sicker because of the heat. Who are you focused on and what agencies are you pushing right now to make sure that changes are prioritized for the communities you serve?
Yeah, great. Thanks for that question. So we're doing a lot of things on a lot of different fronts. We are pushing the city in terms of helping us get, you know, increase our tree canopy and also rolling out new programs for tree maintenance to keep those trees alive, right? Because just planting the trees, you know, that's if you can't keep them alive because of the heat, because of the need of watering or other nuisances associated with trees that are not maintained, then you really are kind of back to square one because they do die, right? So in addition to pushing at the local level for that, we're also, we have recently produced a policy brief with Community Legal Services, another local, I think they're a statewide organization, around increasing state funding for the federal LIHEAP program, which provides people funds to support their utility bills. And so that program helps people warm their homes in the winter. Yeah. Right. Which is a climate change thing, right? Because we see more extreme temperatures on both ends, heat and cold. And what we're wanting to do is to extend the coverage of LIHEAP for Pennsylvania and Philadelphia to cover the hottest months, because right now it basically ends in April. And so they need help to cover their utility bills because people in our
And we're going to have to leave it there.
Sorry.
We're going to have to leave it there. I want to say thank you so much to Caitlin Trudeau of Climate Central. Thanks for being on Studio 2. Also, thank you to Jamalay, Telez Lieberman of Esperanza. I appreciate you both being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much.